patreon.com/thewalkoffpodcast. $4 a month gets you in there.
Baseball, Blue Jays, and more baseball. It's the walk-off with Scott Belford and Adam Mack.
This ball is crushed.
The Die Hard podcast for the casual fan.
And another one. My goodness.
Hello and welcome to the walk-off, everybody. I'm Scott Belford, joined as always by the best co-host in the biz, Adam Mack. As some of you can tell, I'm in a hotel room. Look at this fancy credenza. Oh, my. Wow, I wonder what's in there. I bet you it's an ironing board and an iron. In fact, I'm cheating. I know I looked. All right.
No Bible, though.
No Bible. Couldn't find a Bible
in the drawers in Las Vegas. That feels like a cliche. Las Vegas,
city of sin. It's a plan, right?
Love it.
Lots to talk about here. I am in Vegas, but the show does go on. And big series win. After feeling like this team's back was against the wall, we'll delve in. Manoa's rebound and Gausman continues to dominate on the mound. Rogers Renos were unveiled. We'll touch on that and what we can expect to see at Rogers Center in 2023. The Blue Jays head to the West Coast. They are taking on the Los Angeles Angels. We'll preview that series and then we will talk the boondoggle. That is the Tyler O'Neill scenario in St. Louis. Some weird stuff happening with him and his manager, Marmol. The Cardinal way is really, I don't know, man. Run harder. It's an interesting scenario. So we'll get all into it and then we'll talk what you're watching to wrap things up here. All right, buddy. Let's not waste time. When we got an opportunity to be positive and talk about the good things, let's take that down in the Kansas City series, losing that first game. 1-3 on the season. And despite Toronto Blue Jays fans' best effort not to panic, myself included, we were sounding the sirens a little bit there after Monday's game. But honestly, the Blue Jays rebounded completely. Their starting pitching looked phenomenal. Three great starts from both Kikuchi, Manoa, and Gausman. On top of that, outscoring them 13-4. Honestly, the home runs showed up. Vladdy with a couple. Nice to see that. Varsho goes deep. Biggio goes deep. In fact, Kevin Biggio has been a very pleasant surprise. And has done a phenomenal job in that utility secondary role. You know, he's not getting at bats every game. But he's stepping in. So here is a question for you, Adam. Despite all of this positivity, Trevor Richards goes into the game yesterday in the eighth inning.
Ooh, yeah.
6-0 lead. All he has to do is just get it across the plate. Get the ball in play. He could not do that. He could not even get an out. They wind up scoring 3 runs to make it a much closer game than it should have been. The bullpen gets used a little bit more. So my question to you is, Trevor Richards' rope has got to be getting shorter. You could probably even say the same thing for Tim Mayza. And the past couple years, it was about deploying the pen in a way where you could massage the weaker guys out of the rotation when you can. You know what I'm talking about? Like just if a guy was struggling, it was on Montoyo or Schneider to try and find a way to not play them or to use them in the lowest leverage situations you could.
Yep.
So to come back to the question I was going to get to, how much shorter is this Trevor Richards rope? Knowing that there are 5 very viable options already on the 40-man roster that could be called up in Junior Fernandez, Jay Jackson, Hagen Danner, Nate Pearson, and of course, Yosser Zulueta. Do you think that they are going to continue to strut Richards out there? Or do you think that this is something that we could see come to a head as soon as the next week or two?
Next week, I would say no. Next week or two, perhaps. Yeah, the hottest of hot seats for Trevor Richards. You mentioned Tim Mayza. I know he had the really rough first outing. I think he's settled in nicely since then. That April 4th game against the Royals, I think it was the, was that the Kikuchi game? I don't know. He had four faced four batters, had four strikeouts. So
yeah, and he looked good.
There is definitely like reason to be optimistic. Trevor Richards, two ugly outings. And this is from a guy who was probably already at the bottom of the ladder. As far as...
Yeah, he was on thin ice. You had to feel like Trevor Richards was on thin ice.
So I would say Mayza is going to be with us for a while, being, I think, the only lefty in the pen.
Yes.
And he's had good success with us in the past. He's already shown it this year, like four batters, four strikeouts in the one game. The numbers, I think, look worse than they are on the season through four outings. But Mayza's sticking around. He's not going anywhere anytime soon. Richards, we got this West Coast trip here to LA. We'll get to this later. But after that, we come home to Toronto for a little bit of a stint. And it is the, well, it's just three games against the Rays, and then we're heading back on the road for Houston, New York. So, I don't know. It's...
Maybe this front office.
Here's the thing. Triple A season is underway now.
Yes.
So we're going to start seeing performers putting themselves on the map, on the radar down in Buffalo. Right. So before the Triple A season had started, it's easy to just say, well, we still don't really know who's ready to roll yet.
Yes.
Right. But if, let's just say his name. If Nate Pearson is in AAA and he's hitting 102, 103, 101, whatever it is, and he's
mowing through AAA
guys, and then you're going, well, this has got to be better than what Richards has given us right now. Mm-hmm. Then it gets tough to ignore at that point. And whether it's, again, put any name you want in there, Hagen Danner or... There's just
Junior Fernandez had
so many options at AAA.
Yeah, there whichever, really are.
You only need one guy to have a good first week in AAA, and now that starts to look really appealing when you're strutting Trevor Richards out against the Houston Astros, against the New York Yankees in the back half of April here. So,
truly, the only thing holding the Blue Jays back from moving on from Trevor Richards is the fact that they probably will lose him on the waiver wire. And you know that this front office is all about asset management. This is not something that they would want to do, is give up an arm for nothing that could be productive down the road. But at some point, you almost got to just take your losses, especially when there are five viable guys that are on the 40-man roster. And that's another thing to really keep in mind here with these gentlemen we just named, is that there isn't going to be shuffling on the roster. You don't need to make room for them. This is as easy as calling down to Casey Candela in Buffalo and being like, hey, we need Zulueta. Send him in.
Bring him
right?
up. Bring him up. Trevor Richards looks like the oldest reliever we have with all that silver hair he's got. You know
he's
how
old
he
30,
is? He's
though.
29, yeah, he turned 30
this summer.
Is he only 29?
Yeah, he's not even 30. Hilarious.
Wow, that's crazy. I would have guessed at least like 34, 35 or something. But yeah, 29 years old. Nice.
Well, there's actually a tweet that went viral back in 2021 when the Jays first acquired Trevor Richards, and he was actually doing really well. And one of the folks on the Toronto Blue Jays official fan Twitter site posted Trevor Richards, and they're like, somebody had responded, who is this old man? And then someone below it had posted, he's not old, he's 28. And the person was like, who, how do you know? And then it was his wife, it was Trevor Richards' wife, and he's like, I know because I'm his wife.
Oh man, that's rough. That's funny. Good for her. Trevor Richards, one of the two pitchers we got back for Rowdy Tellez, for anybody keeping track. Bowden Francis being the other one. So
now, as for Tim Mayza, I think you really did hit the nail on the head when you were just like, listen, there's still too much upside for them to truly consider DFAing this dude. Like, there's no other options in the minors either for a left-handed pitcher. So unless you feel that you can pick somebody up, like if there's someone that the Jays prefer on waivers, maybe we see something happen. But I don't think this is a thing until maybe as late as the trade deadline, unless Tim Mayza completely starts Tyler Chatwooding it. I think we're fine. Or his spot's safe anyways. Maybe we're not fine, but...
Yeah, it looked like pitch speed was up a bit in his last outing, too. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but felt like he feels a little bit of urgency. Again, I don't think there is urgency there. I want Mayza being the best version of himself, but I don't think he's running out of rope in the next month. But I think Trevor Richards good.
Yeah.
Especially like if we get into a situation, because we got Angels, Tigers, he's safe for that this week coming up. Then we got the Rays before we head out and face the Astros and the Yankees. If we go through six competitive games with the Astros and Yankees, where there are six opportunities to put in Trevor Richards, and every time John Schneider is like, I just can't do it. You know, that seals his fate, doesn't it? Where you're like, this game isn't out of hand yet, or we only have a 4-run lead. We can't put Richards out there, have him give up 3 runs to the Astros or to the Yankees, right? Like
if John Schneider, April 7th, today, Friday, has lost confidence in Trevor Richards at this point in the season, writing's on the wall. It's over. It's over. Okay. So we'll see where it goes from here. But I that was just one thing that I really wrote down in the show notes. It was just like, I really want to get a temperature gauge on where you're at on Trevor Richards and how much rope he has. And I think we're in the same boat. It's a week or two. Like he has 2 or 3 more starts out or more calls out of that bullpen. And if he can't perform, I think it's done.
Here's his real value right now, to me anyways, it's in his ability to pitch multiple innings.
Yes.
Not good innings, no. But we saw it. It was the April 2nd game. That was the 9-4 loss to the Cardinals. He went out and pitched 2 innings. Now, sometimes you just need a guy that can go out there, take punches. Right, protect the rest of the bullpen. Save Eric Swanson for tomorrow. Save Adam Simber for tomorrow. You know, like just that's the thing is we do have, and we'll get to it, some pitchers who sometimes you need 4, 5, 6, 7 innings from your bullpen that day.
And, well, the real wild card here, and probably the real deciding factor as to how long Trevor Richards is a member of this Toronto Blue Jays team is Mitch White. And the quicker Mitch White gets healthy, the faster Trevor Richards either needs to figure it out or is gone, because this team needs a long man. They need a guy who can be some insular depth within, who can log some innings, like you just said. And that is Mitch White. That's why they went out and they got Mitch White out of LA. That's why they have built Mitch White up like they have. And I think as soon as he's healthy and ready to go, if Trevor Richards isn't pitching well, it's done. All right. Anything to add there, buddy, before we move on?
No, let's talk Manoah and Gausman, who both stepped up and pitched great. Well,
they did. Both looked like start of the top of the rotation arms that we expect them to be. Manoah, of course, struggled in the opening day of the baseball season against the Cards and rebounded completely. 7 innings, 1 hit. He did walk some guys, and in true Manoah fashion, hit a batter. But you can't complain about seven innings of one hit ball, even if there were a little bit of rough edges on that start. Two thumbs up, five stars, you know, all the good reviews there.
That was kind of the story of Alek Manoah's 2022, right? Was even the bad games look pretty good.
Yeah, so. Exactly. Right. No pitch calm. Not only that, it was pretty obvious Kirky was calling the game. Yeah, of course I'm happy. It worked.
Well, if no pitch calm, of course Kirky's calling the game. Alek Manoah's not up there throwing fingers up. That's a given. I guess I see what you're saying. Yeah. Never mind. I'm coming down too hard on you. Yes, it could have been a situation with. No, it couldn't have. I don't know.
It's just that last time Manoah pitched, Kirk was calling the game on pitch calm. So no pitch calm. He didn't have to worry about calling the game. It's all back where it should be in Kirk's. Yeah.
What we've got here is an all squares are rectangles, but not all rectangles are squares situation where, yes, with no pitch calm, of course Kirky's calling the game, but Kirk could be calling the game with pitch calm still. So yeah, we figured it out. It's been solved.
There we go.
We got there.
Oh yeah. This is why folks tune in.
Or tune right out. Anyways, thanks for those.
No, but around. Honestly, when you watched Manoah, did it put your mind at ease? Or were you even worried at all anyways?
No, I was not sweating. I do still think that he's going to regress. I think he's going to have an ERA in the threes, closer to fours than in the twos, closer to threes this year. And I'm fine with that, I think.
Yeah.
I still think last season was not Manoah's best career season. Like, I do think he's going to have a long, successful career and is going to contend for Cy Youngs multiple times in his life.
I was going to say there is a Cy Young in that big man somewhere, and not sure if we see it this year, but throughout his career.
I mean, confidence in Manoah is still good. I mean, we'll get to the week two preview in a bit, but he's going to be pitching the home opener in Toronto. My eyes are going to be on that game, and I think he's going to have a better home opener than season opener. That's what I'm curious to see.
And this is an interesting take from you, because, and I know why you bring up that you're going to be watching extra close. And it's that you brought up the big game thing with Manoah, and that, you know, the last two times we saw him in a big game scenario, it maybe wasn't the ideal scenario and the ideal outcome. So we'll see how opening day in Toronto goes. I still have a ton of faith that he is a big game pitcher. I do too. That extra gear. Yeah.
That's just it's too good to be true in me. It's like Alek Manoah is better than we deserve. And there's no way he's as good as I feel like he is in my heart. So
yeah,
it's reluctant optimism. Kevin Gausman, on the other hand.
The dude is nails.
The dude is mid-season form right now.
Kevin Gausman might wind up being, and I mean, we need to give it a little bit more time here, but he might wind up being the best contract in this front office's repertoire. Yep. You know, $110 million over 5 years, and we're watching pitchers get way more than that now. When they first signed the deal, everyone was like, wow, the Jays are really spending money. And they are, and they were, and that is real money. I'm not by any means saying $110 million isn't real money. But, I mean, we did watch Carlos Rodon get pretty much the exact same contract, but $50 million more 1 year later from the Yankees. And if Gausman continues to look the way he has looked in 2022 and the beginning of 2023, oof, give it to me all day long.
Yeah. I mean, on the trust confidence hierarchy of our starting rotation, Gausman is number one right now, correct?
I would say so for
me. That's not a shot across the bow of Manoah. That is just a feather in the cap of Gausman.
I would love to hear what everyone listening and watching thinks as well. Feel free to drop in the comments for mailbag. Maybe we'll circle back on Kevin Gausman and just the confidence the fan base has on who. Who is your guy? When you think of the pitcher in this Toronto Blue Jays starting rotation that you want game one of the playoffs right now, where are you at? And I think right now I'm at Kevin Gausman.
Yeah. I mean, I know it's April 7th, but
yes,
could be a fun segment to be who's your guy in the opening round of the playoffs.
You're way too early guy.
You're way too early. Game seven of the World Series guy is for me, Kevin Gausman right now. Just.
And that could change. That could change.
Hey, tell you what,
I'll be Kikuchi guys here.
if the playoffs were to start today and we had a 3-game series against the Mariners, yeah,
Kikuchi's in that rotation.
Exactly. Kikuchi's probably in that rotation for game three. You're hoping it doesn't get there, but yeah, wild. Okay. Well, playoffs aren't starting today. So that's all right. Gausman looked good as he was a stud this week. Great opening week for Kevin Gausman.
So the Jays now sit 4-3. I think this is the natural progression. Should we go into the series preview of the Angels, or let's do Rogers Reynolds first? Is that going to mess with you?
We can get to the Rogers Reynolds first. Yeah, let's do Rogers Reynolds.
Okay, let's do Rogers Reynolds first. It was unveiled yesterday that part one of the $300 million renovations being done to the Rogers Center was unveiled by Mark Shapiro and the Toronto Blue Jays brass. They had all of the media down there to do it. Of course, Rogers Center, Sky Dome, originally opened in 1989 and was one of the shining achievements in baseball with that retractable roof. Of course, 35 years pass and times change and it's ready for renos there. So some of the pictures that they released were really, really cool. I know that I don't know if you saw the Rogers Landing in the outfield.
No.
So just beyond the fence in the right field bleachers there, fans with tickets from anywhere in the building are going to be able to walk through. It's called the Catch Bar and Rogers Landing. And that's kind of a patio space overlooking and looming. That's what they like to say. It's looming over the opposing bullpen. But dude, it truly is. Like, you are literally, the bullpen is right there. And then when you're down on the other side, you can actually see through. The only thing that's stopping you is a chain link fence. So there's going to be some intimacy that just wasn't there with the players and with the game in general. So it is very, very cool. I still don't know if the 500 seats have cup holders, which is really my one true question.
A thorn in your craw, yeah.
Thorn in my side. And I don't know if you saw this too. The wall in dead center field, I know we've talked about this, it's 7 feet tall, and Kevin Kiermaier already came out and was like, oh yeah, there are going to be some robberies out there. So your favorite play in baseball should be on display this year at the Rogers 4% Center.
4% of the time that that's where it's hit, there will be some opportunities.
The 4%.
I want seven foot all the way across.
The once
Just give
a week.
Me that. Come on.
Once a week where it's hit dead center. There's numerous open spaces. They've got all sorts of stuff that are going on. We're not going to spend too much time on this just because we're not showing pictures and stuff, but also mostly because on Monday we have Julia Cruz with MLB.com joining us. And nice. She was one of the members of the media that was down at Rogers Center for the big unveiling. So rather than just giving you information from stuff we've read, we'll go right to someone who is there and saw it.
Hey, maybe we could do like a mini mailbag on Monday. And if anybody has any specific questions for Julia related to these renovations, get them in.
Yeah.
We'll ask Julia because I can't always think of things off the top of my head related to it until after the fact. Then we put the episode out and then people are asking all these questions.
Then people are asking the best questions. And we're like, why didn't we should have went to the fans first?
Yeah.
The grounds crew would have had this.
Do the work for us. Come on, guys and gals.
It is one thing about you folks, the grounds crew, that we do appreciate is we always tend to put the homework on you and you do come up big for us.
Never disappoint. Absolutely.
Never disappoints. Off to LA, West Coast swing.
Okay.
The Jays, of course, finished yesterday's series at noon and hopped on a plane out west. jump on in here, Adam.
Before we look ahead to week two, and I'm starting my weeks with the weekend. That's opening weekend. So every Friday, we're going to look ahead to the next week, and that's where the week will start. But before we do that, we got to look back at week one. This is the new segment, three studs, one dud. These are my top three Blue Jays performers for the week. And of course, the one most disappointing Blue Jay. I'll be doing this all season long. Maybe we'll have some sort of an award for points based, who had good weeks the most often, kind of a thing towards the end of the season.
Three studs and a dud. Number one, great name, buddy. You're the best co-host.
I probably stole it from someone else on YouTube. So
irrelevant. Don't bring that up. Okay. Let's hear him, bud. Are you going to start with studs?
We're going to start with stud number three. Now, there were some honorable mentions that we're not going to mention. But we're going to start with number three stud, Vladimir Guerrero Jr., believe it or not.
Ooh.
Had himself a good first week. Sitting at a .407 batting average, not even best on the team, believe it or not, and an OPS of 167. An OPS plus of 226 this week. You'll take that. Of course, hit two home runs and is at 11-for-27 at this point in the season.
Also, it was great to see Vladdy be dropped into that two hole yesterday when they were given Springer the day off. And continue to hit. That's one thing in previous seasons that for whatever reason might have just been bad luck. But in that two hole, he just never hit as well as the three hole. So to see him putting up a couple hits and a dinger yesterday, hey, two thumbs. That's why you're a stud, Vladdy.
I also want to point to his walk to strikeout rate. 5 walks, 1 strikeout.
Wow.
That's pretty impressive. Pretty patience impressive. Hitting. It is... I would say the determining factor of him getting that third stud spot over Dalton Varsho. So Dalton Varsho hitting .357, OPS .978, has a home run of his own, has a stolen base of his own. So does Vladdy, however. But the walk to strikeout.
Vladdy didn't bunt for a hit, though.
That's true. Doesn't have the bunt single. Dalton Varsho, however, 3 walks versus 10 strikeouts.
Right.
So that was the deciding factor for Vladdy being stud number three. All right, stud number two, drum roll, please. Matt Chapman.
Yes.
With a .481 batting average, OPS of 1.221.
Not bad runs yet,
but I'll take it.
In the seven hole.
Yeah. I'll take it. Yeah, well, he's moving up now. He's moving up. He's our cleanup guy, right? He's moving up. Yeah, if this is Matt Chapman in a, I hope it's not a walk year. I'd love to have him back. But
oh yeah,
let's give a career year for Matt Chapman. 7 RBIs, leads the team in RBIs. So I think part of that is a benefit of hitting behind Dalton Varsho. Because this guy runs hard and is going to be racking up RBIs that maybe Matt Chapman doesn't deserve. That's a strong word. Wouldn't have otherwise gotten an RBI with maybe Brandon Belt on second base or Alejandro Kirk on second base. So Matt Chapman, stud number two. Stud number one, Kevin Gausman.
Love it.
2 outings. 12 innings pitched, 0 earned runs, 14 strikeouts. That's all I need to say.
That splitter, just putting it on display. The guy dialed has been in, lights it's out. It has been lights out.
Our dud. A couple contenders for this. Some dishonorable mentions. Danny Jansen. Slow start so far. But... Mm-hmm. Our week one dud, Brandon Belt.
Yeah. I think
just
that's
one hit
say.
Through 21 plate appearances. Man, like, what is he, 35 years old?
He's 34 looking, going on 35.
Looking every day of it. He is, I know, coming off of knee injuries, and I know we were both skeptical of the statements being made. Oh, this is the healthiest I've felt. This is the best the knee has felt in years. And both, you know, that's what you got to say. Everybody's got to say it. There's still reasons to be hopeful that he'll get back
one
to
thing
where...
that did. Yeah. Like one thing that did stand out about his spring training was how slowly they ramped him up. I mean, I think most Jays fans will look back and remember that he didn't even take a swing in a regular spring training game until 2 weeks in. And at first, they really spun it as this is what Brandon would like. He knows his body. This is the way it goes. But as we watch him play right now, I think that it had a lot more to do with where he was at physically. Of course, they haven't released anything on this, but he just doesn't look right. I'm not panicked about Brandon Belt yet. I know that there are a pile of Blue Jays fans that can't wait to call this a big failure.
I definitely don't want to call it a big failure. I do want to recalibrate my expectations for Brandon Belt. And that's probably on me for coming in too excited, too high on Brandon Belt. I was really looking forward to just a full-time DH, you know, a David Ortiz, an Edwin Encarnacion, a guy who was just going to hit in the 4 or 5 spot and just mash. I know he was going to be slow lumbering around the bases, but watching him in the batter's box, he looks like the most unathletic player on this team right now. And I'm including Alejandro Kirk in that. Again, maybe the season can still look good by the end of the year, but for the time being, I don't even want to see him in the DH role consistently. Like, all things being equal, if everybody's healthy, we've probably got Whit Merrifield in second base, right? I would say on a day where Alejandro Kirk is catching, I'd rather see Kevin Biggio as our DH.
Mm-hmm. One thing I will say is that it is a very nice situation to be in, where as it is, and I think we are going to get into this, there are guys who are struggling to get enough at bats to kind of get their swing going. And when you have that crunch for ABs, to have a guy who's maybe struggling a little bit out of the gate isn't necessarily the worst thing, because we're watching Danny Jansen struggle a little bit with a decreased playing time. Santiago Espinal, I mean, we'll get right into it, but Santi's not playing. He's just not playing.
Yeah, very low usage.
Adam, do you know
he's been in what? It's two games so far. Yeah, he's 1 for 8 across 2 games.
You know, so if you're getting eight at bats
a week.
That's tough, man. That's tough. And I mean, probably the performer who has been the most impressive in that on again, off again scenario is Kevin Biggio. Yeah. And of all the guys, he's probably got the most experience being that platoon.
Yeah.
Limited playing time guy. But boy, oh boy, he has been excellent. The opportunities Biggio has been given, he has taken full advantage of.
Certainly.
So where are you at on ABs? Because this is a problem, right? Would you say this is a problem? I know you brought up something interesting, Kevin, you heard on Blair and Barker.
Yeah, well, so I was listening to Blair and Barker the other day while I was waiting to pick my kid up from school. And look, I know the answers we're going to get from Shai Davidi or Arden Zwelling when we ask them what's going on with second base here, right? And they're going to give you all the Rogers talk of, well, it's going to be production based, and Schneider said he's going to go with the hot hand, and that may be true in intent, but there's just something about Barker when you're hearing it from a former big leaguer who played in it, who was in that situation himself in the past, to tell it like it is and to kind of give you a peek behind the curtains between the years on the frustration that has to be developing there at the second base position, right? Espinal is a person with an ego and a confidence level that has gotten him to the MLB, right? So Barker brings up the point of there's not enough at-bats to go around. The usage has got to, even if publicly we never hear about it, got to be a source of contention among someone in that troop of second basemen, right? And he pointed his fingers towards Santiago Espinal in that at a certain point, like we're looking at right now, Espinal, two outings in the first seven games. He's on pace for 46 games played this year. If everything scales out, and there's no reason to believe that it does, because that's not how life works. 46 games is not enough. Like, this is a guy in his arb years. He's playing for a payday too, right? Not the same payday that Matt Chapman's playing for.
No, but
you know, it's hard to go into your arbitration year and say, hey, I'm worth $5 million when the Blue Jays get to point and go, you played 46 games last year, buddy.
It must be very frustrating for the guy because, let's face it, he did have a real breakout season in 2022 All-Star. He really found his role within Major League Baseball, which is very good with the glove. He can have some hot streaks at the plate, hot enough to carry him into the All-Star game, even though, yes, I know that it was because there were some injuries to other players and he kind of got the last nod. Irrelevant. An All-Star game is an All-Star game. Very impressive. Not a lot of players wind up playing in the Major League Baseball All-Star game. And that is where Santiago Espinal found himself last year. So to now be relegated to this spot where he's not even, forget about winning that everyday second base spot. He's fighting for the most utility time, which is already being kind of handed out to Kevin Biggio. And Biggio, I mean, you look at his ABs, it's probably double. Can you bring that up real quick Adam? Where... Okay.
Kevin Biggio.
Because that's surprising to me that Espino's only had 8 at-bats in 7 games.
Kevin Biggio has 17 plate appearances. So technically 13 at-bats, but he's got 4 walks. So, double, basically, the batting opportunities. And
he's using them.
Look, if Biggio is going to give us an on-base percentage of 400, then he's our utility guy.
I love Santi.
And here's one thing, because we talked about this in the offseason of like odd man out and what are they going to do? Because Barker brings up the point of like the frustrations have to lead to one of these three guys going into someone's office and saying, what are we doing here? Like, move someone or move me, right? Because, you know, Espinal could go play second baseman as a 140 games a year guy for a lot of baseball teams and could get a reasonable amount of money for him and his family.
I was just going to say, think about how good his glove is and how his experience at shortstop, third, and second. You can't tell me there isn't a team out there who could use a Santiago Espinal, a guy who is under control. He's in arb years. He's fairly affordable, and he just does a really good job with all the little things defensively.
So we'd gone into the season going, I wonder when the Jays would want to trade Espinal, right? Or just one of the second basemen. We figured Espinal because he would have the most value and like the quality of player you get back or whatever. But it's just interesting because I hadn't really thought about it like this. And to hear Kevin Barker frame it this way as at what point does Espinal ask to be traded? And that's.
And we're using Espinal's name here to kind of cover Merrifield and Cavan. And I mean, Lucas is up right now. But if Lopez winds up being on this team at some point, like there's not a lot of playing time.
Here's one thing to consider too. Like Merrifield's probably gone after this year. I know they have the mutual option, but it's like $18 million. He's getting $6 million this year.
Yeah, so there's no way. Just
buy him out for $500,000 and send him on his way. Like, yeah, I don't know. It's use what you've got while you've got it, I guess, right? Is probably the attitude. And then
But this is a really interesting. This is a really interesting scenario because of the fact that it's got to be frustrating for the players. You always look at it from the front office's standpoint, or I do as a fan. I'm always like, okay, well, where does this guy slot in, and this guy slot in, and that's extra depth. But if you've just done what Santiago Espinal did, which was literally take yourself from obscurity, make yourself an everyday major league player, prove yourself, and then still be relegated to the bench, that's got to be frustrating. And you're right. At what point is there a straw that breaks the camel's back and somebody's in an office going, listen, Schneids, I got to get out of here. I should be playing every day in Oakland. Like,
well, that's the thing is, I mean, if he put up a 290 batting average and gold glove potentially defense for the Oakland Athletics for the rest of the season and then hit the free agent market, maybe had some suitors. I guess not the free agent market because he's in his arb years, but at least could go into the arbitrator's office and be like, hey, it doesn't matter what Oakland wants to pay me. This is what I'm worth. Here's my numbers to back it up. Right. Mm-hmm. It is funny how, like, when we look at Vladdy and Bo and these guys, we're like, well, you know, these guys have got to be frustrated and they're people and whatever. But then those supplemental pieces are on the edge. We just look at from the team perspective and go, well, how can the team use these guys? And we don't consider how do these guys' feelings factor in, right? But
so there is almost never trades in April and May. Almost never. Now, that being said, those of you who are Toronto Blue Jays fans will remember April 5th of last year, Randall Grichuk swapped out for Raimel Tapia out of Colorado. So it has happened. Now, that was a little bit different of a season because of the CBA fight between the owners and the players and the fact the season started late. Season didn't even start till April 7th, which is where we are right now. So will this team consider a trade a week into the season? I doubt it very much so, but we'll wrap this topic up with just saying, let's keep our eye on the frustration level of some of these guys who are seeing less playing time than they are used to.
Yeah. Okay. Let's look at the actual schedule ahead then of this week two preview. We got the Angels who are off to a good start, 4-2. And then we got the Tigers who are the Tigers. So
yes,
three games in LA against the Angels. We are going to dodge Shohei Ohtani. I mean, unless you're looking for an entertaining game, you're probably happy with that. I'm sure he's going to hit a home run or two against these three Blue Jays pitchers that we're doling out here. But we got Chris Bassitt taking the bump today, Jose Barrios on Saturday, and Yusei Kikuchi on Sunday. When we did our April predictions and we looked at the schedule, I was penciling in the Jays for a 3-0 series against the Angels. I want to use my recalibration card and play that and say, we go 1-2. That's about what I don't want to say. I'll be happy with that, but maybe I'll be on the road.
Three big question marks for the starting pitchers that are going to be taking the bump for the Blue Jays. Yeah, 1-2 is possible. I like to think that they can win this series. The Angels are still a questionable team at best, despite the fact they started 4-2. I mean, last year they started, they were almost 10 games above 500 before they finally nosedived.
So Angels pitching matchups. We've got Chris Bassitt versus Patrick Sandoval. Sandoval looks good so far this year, 1.8 ERA through just the one outing. Last year pitched to an ERA of 2.91.
Yeah,
27 games. Year. You'll take that. So I'd say pitching edge Angels in game one against Chris Bassitt.
Looking for a big rebound from Chris Bassitt too. You know what? Honestly, even if he allows four runs but can go seven innings and looks like he's got some control, that's what I'm after.
I want any reason to inspire confidence from Chris Bassitt today. Tomorrow, Saturday's game, we've got Jose Barrios versus Tyler Anderson, the lefty, pitched to a 2.57 ERA through 30 games with the Dodgers last year. So that's going to be a tough pitching matchup for Jose Berríos to match the performance of Tyler Anderson. And then in game three, Sunday afternoon, they're putting
the Reed bearded dragons.
Well, we're putting Kikuchi out there. That is our confidence level three guy right now versus Reed Detmers, who is also a lefty. His stat line from last year looks like 3.77 ERA through 25 games with the Angels last year. So I would say, if we're just basing our prediction on pitching matchup, I would say Sunday is probably our best shot at a win. I know there's more than just pitching matchup, and I'll take our batting order versus their batting order for all three games, especially the way we're mashing right now. But there you go. That's the LA Angels series. How do you feel about it?
Well, they are going into LA on a three-game winning streak. They do seem to have found their bats a little bit. They've settled down when it comes to the starting pitching. Yes, Chris Bassitt has a big question mark hanging over his head, and you hope that the 34-year-old veteran with a pile of experience and has shown that he can rebound throughout his career can do just that. You know, like this Chris Bassitt start to me is the biggest one of the series, even just to see how he looks. Can he gain his confidence back? You know, because he really seemed shell-shocked. Like when you listen to him in that press conference afterwards, and he was just like, I don't know. Like, that's literally what he was doing. He was just like, I don't know. I don't even know what to say. You know, so.
See, I take the opposite approach, and I would say of those three, Bassitt, Berríos, Kikuchi, the Bassitt is the one that I think has the least amount of consequences coming out of this second start, because I feel like if Kikuchi has a good second game, my confidence in him is going to be through the roof. Right?
Bad idea.
If he has a stinker of a game, it's just like, okay, well, that feels like maybe what we can expect all year. Some really good ones, some really bad ones. And if Berríos has a bad game, that's two clunkers to start the year for a guy who's coming off of a bad year. Like, it's going to be pretty tough to ignore the narrative that's going to get tied to Jose Berríos and what is going on with him, right? Whereas if Chris Bassitt has a second bad outing, I don't feel like that impacts his ability to have a good third outing.
That's probably very astute, although it would be nice for him to get that feather in his cap of a good solid start as a Blue Jay officially. I am very thankful that it is the Angels that we're going into in this series for Bassitt, Berríos, and Kikuchi. Let's see if these three can gain a little bit of confidence. These are the three question marks in this rotation, which is too bad. Bassitt shouldn't be a question mark, and he wasn't up until that very first start of the season. So again, if he can just water off a duck's back, shake it off, come out and look like the $1 to get over 3 years, that is going to be a win.
All right. Well, after that, we got the Tigers. Manoah, Gausman. We can get a second outing from Chris Bassitt this week too. That's in Toronto. That feels like I want a sweep.
Yeah, I want a sweep there.
To clarify, too. A Blue Jays sweep.
Yes. Thank you for not taunting the baseball gods and leaving that up to what they determine.
Well, he said he wanted a sweep. Here you go. Opening week opening weekend there in Toronto. I guess opening day in Toronto. It should be a good week.
It should be.
I think if we end the week 4-2, I'd be happy with that.
Yeah, I'm happy with that.
Puts us at 8-5 heading into a Tampa Bay Rays series, and they're probably going to be 12-0. But we'll be within striking distance. So, all right. There's our week two preview.
Anything to add?
Let's talk the weird stuff with the Canadian Babe Ruth down there in St. Louis, Tyler O'Neill.
So for those of you who didn't see it, Cardinals outfielder Tyler O'Neill was thrown out at home plate by Ronald Acuna Jr. They were playing the Braves. This was on Wednesday night. It was the end of the seventh inning. St. Louis manager Oliver Marmol was not pleased with the effort of Tyler O'Neill, which is interesting because I know, Adam, we were talking about this yesterday. We were watching the video of it. Listen, Tyler O'Neill wasn't chugging around third like, let's say, Dalton Varsho was when he scored on that single for Matt Chapman from second base. But did you feel like he was dogging it to the level that Marmol made it sound and then publicly called him out on?
No, definitely not. When we watched the replay, like, was he going balls out? No, like, he was not running with his hair on fire, but he was not sauntering either.
Yeah.
Like, the level of, like, public ridicule and being...
was a little surprising.
Yeah, like, the benching was surprising, and then to, like, publicly associate... like, not to just say... like, if Marmol had of just benched Tyler O'Neill and said privately, yeah, like, hey, kid, that's not good enough, and you're going to get a day off. But then to go out and answer reporters' questions and not to just be like, hey... he's got he's you know, coming back from some leg injuries. We're just giving him some day off to rest. We don't want to overdo it early in the season. Could have just said that.
Yeah.
Right. But to come out and be like,
really went out of his way,
bench, and this is why. That's just, I don't like it.
And these this is the statement in the press game after. That's not our style play, as far as effort. Rounding the bag there, it's completely unacceptable. And then O'Neill's response was, I think he was pretty blunt about it. He didn't think I gave the best effort, O'Neill said after the game. I'm out here every day grinding my ass off and giving it my all, trying to stay on the field for 162 games. Like I've said, I've got to get a better jump next time and get around the base a little quicker and be in there next time. So O'Neill said all the right things, but truthfully, dude, when you read that, I don't get that he's actually feeling that. You know, I'm not like, when I heard the statement from O'Neill, you could tell he was pissed. You could tell O'Neill was pissed. He said all the right things. He didn't make it worse. He took his benching. But just odd.
So one thing to note with Tyler O'Neill, for anybody who's not familiar, he is one of the fastest players in baseball. So when we do watch the replay and we go, well, he's not going that slow. He, according to 2022, he was the sixth fastest player in the NL. Very fast. 99th percentile sprint speed. This year, through seven games, he's 79th percentile. For sprint speed. So, okay. But again, hamstring injuries.
Yeah.
He's coming back from. So like, I don't fault a guy for who's coming back from injury, unless you're Brandon Belt, for looking unathletic on the ball field.
If you've ever had a hamstring injury, if you've ever dealt with an injury with the quad, I think everyone, and this is just even life, forget about athletics. There is just a switch in your brain that holds you back until you're 100% confident in it.
Yep.
And it's tough to break through that. It's probably one of the biggest obstacles of injured players is coming back and being able to just go full out. And well, I know and that was one.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say there was rain that day. It was a little bit of a wet field. I am not making excuses for Tyler O'Neill. However, that early in the season, coming off an injury marred 2022, where hamstring was the problem, it's just a really weird way for Marmol of the Cardinals to handle this. Now, I know you brought this up yesterday, and I don't know if it's necessarily the case, but maybe it's a little bit on Oliver Marmol's plate and in his head that he's the youngest manager in baseball. He's sitting at age 36 years old, going on 37 here this spring. Is that a factor? Because that's what it felt like. It felt like an inexperienced manager trying to take control.
Yeah, it felt like trying too hard kind of a thing. Just back to touch on the hamstring injuries and how those affect a guy. I mean, we talked about this with Danny Jansen's. Ooh, I can't talk. With Danny Jansen's hamstring injury in 2021, in which he missed like 11 or 12 weeks. He missed 4 or 5 weeks and then came back, played for 2 or 3 weeks, and then missed another like 7 weeks with that hamstring injury. Mm-hmm. Because probably came back, pushed it too hard, and then re-aggravated it, right? So, like, again, I can't fault a guy for going easy in April when it's definitely more important to have Tyler O'Neill in their lineup all season long than... Now, that, I don't know who that's on, like, duties-wise, but third base coach should be in communication with his players and should recognize... Again, I don't. Is that on Tyler O'Neill to go to his base coaches and say, "Hey, look, I'm still not at 100%. So factor that into your decision on whether you're sending me home or not." Because that's what it felt like, was he should have just never been sent home.
Yeah, it did feel that way.
So, like, not to like totally put blame on a third base coach, but like, if he just holds up at third, I don't think we're benching him and saying, "Hey, you should have scored on that play." We're benching him because he was thrown out by a mile on a play in which he wasn't running 100%. So, like, this all could have been avoided.
This is year two of Tyler O'Neill's arbitration years. He wound up making $4 million this season. Next year is his final season before he is a free agent. If there is animosity, if there is dissent within this like Cardinals-O'Neill relationship, okay? Now, we're all aware the big signing for the Blue Jays in center field this season was, of course, Kevin Kiermaier. One year contract. So, Canadian boy Tyler O'Neill, maybe the Cardinals are ready to move on from him. There is 1 year left. At a very reasonable rate, probably my guess is $6 to $7 million in arbitration next year. There is a spot in this Blue Jays outfield. They could use a speedster. They could use a lefty bat, with Kiermaier's lefty bat being gone. Just saying, might be a good fit.
Might be a good fit. Don't disagree with you. Although I got to say, the way Kevin Kiermaier's playing, I kind of hope this is more than a 1 year deal.
I would agree, man. He has looked good, eh? He's looked good at the plate. I would love to hear what everyone watching this or listening, feel free to drop a comment here. Where are you at on Kevin Kiermaier? Have you been impressed? Are you not impressed? Right? Like, it has been just a joy to watch him in the outfield. He has surprised me at the plate. He's looked good on the base path. Everything that was advertised about Kevin Kiermaier has exceeded my expectations. I'm all in on the guy. The complete opposite of Brandon Bell, right? Where he came out and he's like, "I'm the healthiest I've been in years." Then you watch him and you're like, "He is! Look at him!"
All right. Let's Kevin Kiermaier exceeding expectations. Dalton Varsho. Thanks. Is Dalton Varsho or Dalt? Because we're coming up on home, like the home opener. Is Dalton Varsho the number one jersey sale at Rogers Center next week?
I was just going to say, I think I want a Varsho jersey.
Except under for the number 25 for four is a more dumb years. Number.
Yeah. Couldn't agree more.
Matt Chapman's 26, however. Now that's a number you can hang your hat on.
Exactly. It's a curve. It's the curves.
Well, that's the thing though, is Matt Chapman, do you want to buy a Chapman jersey and then watch him leave this offseason potentially? Or Dalton Varsho, that's a good investment. That's several more years of wearing a jersey that I feel, I know it's early, 7 years or 7 games into feeling pretty good about Dalton Varsho in a Blue Jays jersey. So All right. What you watching this weekend, big guy? Let's get out of here. It's Easter weekend.
Okay. So today or tomorrow, I'm not 100% sure yet, but I've got my wife convinced to go watch some AAA baseball here in Vegas. We're going to go watch the Oklahoma City Dodgers. Of course, that's the AAA affiliate of the Los Angeles Dodgers. Maybe one of the best AAA teams in all of baseball. So I'm excited for that versus the Las Vegas Aviators, the AAA team for the Oakland Athletics, maybe the worst AAA team in all of baseball. What a fun little dichotomy going on there. But I am excited to go watch some baseball.
There you go.
How about you, buddy? What you watching?
Going to the Super Mario Brothers movie tonight. So
nice.
I could not be more excited.
Is Lily excited? Is she pumped?
She's yeah. Very pumped. Yeah, she's very pumped on this. She's definitely a gamer girl. Loves her Fortnite and Call of Duty more than I'd probably like to admit. she's very excited. I'm very excited. This is in collaboration between Nintendo and Illumination Studios, who's like the studio behind Despicable Me and the Minions movies. So
nice.
There's no chance this movie isn't great. Like, it might not be your cup of tea, and I'll give you that. But there's no way you can watch this movie and think that this is bad. Like, I just can't see myself not enjoying this.
Not movie. Enjoying it.
Not a big yeah. Minions guy, but every Minions movie I've watched, I can't pick it apart and say, well, the plot sucked and the jokes weren't very good. Like, it's for what it is, they're good movies. The animation's great. Yes. There's no chance this isn't a great movie. I think it's going to make $1 billion. How's that?
Bold
wildly,
prediction. I like it.
Wildly popular.
I feel the same way. I'm not going to go see it in theater, but I am excited for it. I think it's going to be excellent. We've already talked about the old Super Mario movie, yeah. the live action one. So yeah. Before we get out of here, I'm working hard on trying to be a little bit better with self-promotion. So I am headed to the Okanagan at the end of April here for some shows. I'm in Penticton. I'm in Kelowna, West Kelowna. So we are going to drop the ticket link for that below in the first comment of the YouTube page here. It's been cool seeing walk-off members of the community there. You know, the grounds crew coming out, seeing some comedy. So
Everyone has been too shy to take you up on your standing offer of buying them a beer if they
come up and John mention. Dick, member of the Patreon, and he actually downloaded my album when I first released it in September, and he reached out personally. I don't know John personally, just through the podcast, but he was really excited about the album, and he really enjoyed it. So he said he's definitely going to take me up on that beer. So there you go.
Good. Good job, John. All right. Well, Scott, enjoy your time in Vegas. Enjoy your weekend. No long toss this Sunday, Easter Sunday. We're taking the week off for that. But we're back Monday.
We're back, you bet, with MLB.com's Julia Cruz. So join us there. We'll talk everything Blue Jays. And if you do have any questions for Julia when it comes to anything to do with the Blue Jays or the new renos at Rogers, feel free to drop that in the comments and we will pass those along to her.
All right. Happy Easter. Don't let your dogs eat the chocolates. And bye, Scott, and bye, Dad.
Thanks for listening to the Walk Off Podcast with Scott Belford and Adam Mack, with a new episode every Friday.
Oh! With a drop. Jeez and crackers. Shows to pitch to him.
Thanks for listening. Thanks for listening to the Walk Off Podcast with Scott Belford and Adam Mack, with a new episode every Friday.
Osborne with a drive. Cheese and cracker shows to pitch to him. Wrong move.
Thanks for listening.